If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Major Spoilers theme song! Major Spoilers theme song!
Hello, everybody. This is a Major Spoilers podcast special movie edition with very special hosts. I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Now, you may be asking yourself, where's Steven? Where's Rodrigo? Where's the sidekick? Where's Zach, right? Mm-hmm. You know, well, actually, Steven and the gang could not go see X-Men Days of Future Past early, but we could. And so they asked us to review X-Men Days of Future Past for you. If you don't know, we're writers and contributors for the site.
Yeah.
So it's okay that we kind of sort of co-opted the podcast.
We didn't co-opt.
Well, Steven asked us, and so we happily obliged.
We did.
Yes. So we just saw X-Men Days of Future Past literally like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And of course, this being major spoilers, there will be huge spoilers. So if you haven't watched the movie, you know, at
come
this point,
come back later.
Yeah, please, please come back later because it's actually, you know, a quite decent movie. I'll say it right up front. I happily enjoyed myself. And so you should happily enjoy yourself.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Ashley, I want to start off real quick. We're going to, you know, really quickly, I think we should just, you know, talk through the movie.
Cool.
Through a synopsis of the movie and just, you know, see what sparks our imagination of this review. But I want to ask a question right up front that I think everybody else wants to know.
Okay, no pressure.
Does this X-Men movie suck?
No, it's awesome, and I want to see it like 9 more times.
You want to see it 9 more times?
Yeah,
it was that
totally.
Good.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm definitely like see it as many times in the theater as possible kind of person. I saw Return of the King 11 times when
feel,
I was a child.
Do you feel there was enough in this movie that like there's enough layers that you would get more from it?
Upon multiple viewings? Yeah, and I think the same sort of things would probably bother me, but I would be able to get over that and enjoy more of the story and the depth that it plays with.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's just kind of talk about it. So, you know, it starts off in the crazy future, right? Well, it starts off in New York.
It does.
And then it jumps to Moscow, which I was surprised to see Moscow. And then it jumped to China.
It was really cool to see Moscow. It was cool to see Colossus in Russia with a really American dialect.
Yeah, we got to see. Yeah, true.
I think that guy's great as Colossus.
Well, we got to see some New Mutants. We got to see Bishop. Who
he was great for the one line he had.
Mm-hmm. Although they made his power absorption more of like it was like channeling into a gun, which I'm okay
with. It was okay with for the defensive purposes against the Sentinels, but yeah.
Well, as we like, yeah, they're in a far, far future.
10 whole years.
Yeah,
9 years.
Well, Wikipedia says it's 2023.
Yeah, but you know, Chris Claremont said it was 2013
in the original comic books. Yes, yes. And so the Sentinels are hunting the X-Men, and the Sentinels are also hunting humans, and the Sentinels basically...
Well, the humans that can carry mutant genes to future generations.
Exactly. That I thought was a very interesting point, that they said that eventually the Sentinels could figure out which of the normies were going to have mutant babies.
That's from the comic books as well. That's alluded to.
Is it?
Very slightly in the beginning during all the exposition, they allude to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really fleshed out the way it is in the story.
Now,
and they said in X2 that this is just an interesting piece of trivia, that they know that the mutant gene is carried on the father's side.
Oh.
So I'm assuming there's like no men, and it's very much like Why the Last Man in the future.
Where everybody wears this sleek black leather
and has a monkey,
and has you know. Did you like the costumes? Did you like the future X-Men costumes? Because they were sort of like a weird black leather X-Men mixed with almost like Dark Knight body armor.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with them. I don't have a problem with the like weird leather fetish costumes of the regular.
I actually had a huge problem with the future X-Men costumes. I thought they looked dopey and stupid.
They looked a little more video game than I probably would have liked, but we didn't see enough of them that it was a huge hindrance for me. So,
all right. So, you know, the Sentinels are hunting everybody.
Yeah, they're scary.
We see Bishop. We get introduced to a very cool Blink.
Yeah.
And Blink with her teleporting powers.
Cooler than Blink has any reason to be.
Oh, yeah.
She's so good.
Like, that right there maybe be like, okay, 20th Century Fox, it's time to maybe consider an X-Files movie.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
It's that cool. So you learn that they get attacked by the Sentinels,
mm-hmm.
and then Kitty Pryde can send Bishop back in time, his consciousness, to his previous body to warn them that the Sentinels are coming, and then the Sentinels never attack. And, of course, Charles Xavier and Magneto and Wolverine find out about this, and that's how
they
hatch the grand plan
mm-hmm.
to do this. The biggest problem I have with this movie is with the statement I just said.
Me too!
They never explain why Kitty Pryde can transport somebody's consciousness through time.
Yeah, and I love Kitty Pryde. She's longstanding, one of my favorite X-Men characters and one of my favorite characters in comics. And I had a problem with that she could, I'm doing air quotes that you can't see, that she could phase people back through time. That bothered me, and the fact that Ellen Page was totally phoning in her performance.
Oh, really Ellen Page?
Because I like Ellen Page.
Wanted nothing to do with this movie.
She took that paycheck and ran.
Every one of their lines, she's like, oh, I had to hold Bobby's hand. Oh.
Yeah.
There's another thing that I wanted to really quickly point out that mm-hmm. I thought was cool. They did a quick shot at the very beginning of the movie of all the prisoners that are being held by the Sentinels and stuff. I liked seeing the children, and this is kind of weird, the children with the branded M on their eyes.
Yeah, there were a lot of them.
Very shadow. I love that, because I'm a big Bishop fan.
Yeah.
It's a little weird. Now, the Sentinels had the power to absorb mutants' powers, right?
And to create the best defense against them.
But did they look a little bit too much like the Asgardian Destroyer? Because
they totally did.
Because they opened their face exactly like the Asgardian Destroyer, and they would zoom that firepower.
Yeah, and
I was like, somebody has watched Thor a little bit too much here, Bryan Singer.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, Tom Hiddleston's hot, so maybe that's why you watched Thor.
Did you like the Future Sentinels?
I did like the Future Sentinels. I thought it was the best the Sentinels have ever looked.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually scary.
I actually like the retro Sentinels better.
You're wrong.
I like the 1970 Sentinels because I like that they had this little fan in their chest that could flip down and be like,
That's
my sound effect right
It sounded pretty much like that. I like the future ones best, too, because we got to see a lot of them actually murdering the X-Men.
Holy crap, we did.
And it was really, like, upsetting. Like, I didn't weep over anyone, but I was like, wow, they just crushed Bobby's head, and oh, they just ripped Colossus in half.
There was a lot of murder and death in this movie, a lot. If your fantasy is to see the X-Men brutally murdered on screen,
this is the film for you.
Oh, this is the movie for you. Like, this is a two thumbs up movie for you.
I snorted. I'm really sorry. It was not nice.
So, okay, they hatch the plan that they can send Wolverine back in time, right?
Yeah.
And they send him back to 1973 because that's when Mystique is going to shoot Bolivar Trask.
Yeah.
You know, the amazing Peter Dinklage, who I thought was pretty dang good in this movie, even though he didn't really have anything to do in this movie.
He was great. He showed up and delivered his lines, and he played the Mystique part really great.
And he wore a mustache so well.
Sure. Yeah, it happened. That's how I feel about the mustache.
The mustache just showed up on his lip, and it totally happened. Now, I love the scene where Wolverine wakes up. He wakes up and he's looking at a lava lamp,
yeah,
and it's really cool. And he's apparently Wolverine in the 70s worked for a mob guy because
it was like a protector of the mob boss's daughter.
Yeah. So the mob guy's
sleeping with.
Yeah, he was sleeping with a mob daughter, and they try to shoot him, and he's like, "Oh, you don't want to do this, bub."
That was really cool when all the bullets popped out of his mm-hmm. skin. I like that. I like that little callback to X2 as well.
I think this movie was the most Wolverine Hugh Jackman has ever been, the closest to the comic book Wolverine he's ever been, because that scene, and he has a couple other scenes later,
which we'll talk about.
We can skip ahead just on this one little thing. There's a scene later where Magneto gets all mad and he pulls on the airplane and he pulls all the things out of it, makes a big mess basically, and Wolverine is like, You're gonna pick that stuff up, bub. He actually cusses during that, but I won't say that.
Yeah,
and it's very Wolverine.
It's the Wolverine-iest he's ever been. He was more Wolverine-y than in either of the origin flicks,
exactly,
which was really cool.
Now, so he goes to the mansion and mm-hmm. he sees that Professor X doesn't have his powers because Professor X is so mad that he can't walk again that he's been injecting himself with a DNA treatment to get rid of his powers, but it lets him walk.
Yeah.
And he's addicted to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
a little bit Sherlock Holmes-esque.
Yeah? How so?
Just the addiction and the brilliant mind. It just always makes me think of Sherlock shooting up cocaine.
What did you think of James McAvoy's transformation as the Xavier of the 1970s compared to what we saw him in First Class?
I actually really liked him as the more sort of messed up, tormented Professor X. I had mixed feelings about him in First Class.
Uh-huh.
And I thought he did a really, really good job. And maybe it was because he had more like messed up emotional life to play, so he had more to work with, but I thought it was great. I thought the nose piece worked.
Yeah,
he looked like Patrick Stewart.
They gave James McAvoy a nose in this movie.
Not a big one.
But enough that, like, it was because that, like, there's that one shot that they even showed in the trailers where it's Patrick Stewart looking profile on with James McAvoy. And if they didn't have... Patrick Stewart just has...
He's got a beak.
He's got a heck of a schnoz. And James McAvoy doesn't.
No.
And it would be noticeable.
Yeah.
It would be very noticeable.
The one shot I really noticed it in is when... And this is skipping ahead a little bit, but they're all wet because the sprinkler systems come on.
Mm-hmm.
And you could kind of see the edges of the makeup rubbing off.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. So that was the one time I really noticed it.
I actually thought that James McAvoy as Xavier was weaker in this movie.
Really?
Than the first movie.
Interesting. Is it because you don't like that side of him?
No.
Be the strong leader?
Well, I didn't mind that. I just thought that there were a lot of acting choices that James McAvoy made that I thought were very kind of the cliche, because they introduced this whole thing that he was addicted to his DNA treatment, and they sort of made him like a drug addict, and they really harped on that because they did close-ups of the syringe.
Yeah, it's a little train spotting. It's a little creepy.
Well, it was all, yeah, and it was very like heroin-esque, and they had him tying off his arm, and James McAvoy played that exactly the same way we've seen in so many other movies.
Maybe James McAvoy's never done heroin.
Mm. That's true. All right. That's a good enough point for me.
Moving on.
Okay, so we learn that Magneto is in the bottom of the Pentagon, and they're like, we got to bust them out. And so Wolverine, who somehow knows this person in the future, says, like, we got to get Quicksilver.
Yeah.
And so we go and meet Peter. They never call him, what would be the correct way? It's Piotre?
Piotre or Piotr, depending on which region of Russia you're from.
Maximoff. Well, they never say his next, they just call him Peter.
Or if he's from, you know, made up Marvel country, the pronunciation could be anything.
What'd you think of Quicksilver?
I thought Quicksilver looked stupid.
Yeah.
The costume was stupid. It makes a little more sense.
It was all silver.
Yeah.
It was all, that was the problem, I think, because his hair is silver, the goggles are silver, the coat is silver.
It makes a little more sense when you see him in the era. Like, I was more forgiving when I saw it in the film than when I had first seen the promo images, but the little nugget who played him from American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm. And Kick-Ass.
Sure. Haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. Was so good.
He was good.
He was so good.
He was really good.
And I was like, wow, Quicksilver's never been this cool.
Yeah.
Ever.
Quicksilver almost stole the movie.
If he'd had more scenes, he would have stole.
He's only in two scenes. He's
got like three scenes and then a little baby scene at the end.
He's maybe in 15 minutes. Maybe.
Yeah, and he's got the best lines.
He has the best lines, and he has the best action scene of the entire movie.
Film, yeah.
So what they did is he goes into the Pentagon and he zooms in and gets Magneto out of his cell. And then
it makes a really, really funny joke because he asks Magneto, so what is it that you do? And he's like, I control metal. And then Peter says, oh, my mom once knew a guy like who could do that.
Yeah.
Which was so
great. They do a little
great shout
out.
And all the little nerds were like, yes!
Well, in my head canon, you know, Magneto is his father.
Of course.
I don't care what that movie tries to say or tries to make Havok older than Cyclops. I don't care.
Yeah.
but I thought it was very clever where he put his hand behind Magneto's head and Magneto was like, what are you doing? And he was like, oh,
I'm protecting your neck from whiplash. And then Magneto goes, what do you mean?
And then he, like, split seconds, runs like a mile, and then suddenly he's like, oh. And then I also like, this is a fact that I think would be very true if somebody had super speed. Magneto was sick. He had motion sickness.
Yeah.
And he took, like, 3 minutes, this whole entire elevator ride.
To get over it.
And I was like, that's 100% true. You would be so sick.
I think that's... And I'm electing to choose this because I like to give actors a lot of credit. I think that was a Fassbender choice, probably more than a script choice.
You think
him taking that amount of time
to get over it?
Yeah, and I also think that if you were writing that in a comic book scene, I don't know if that would happen. He would be okay.
It would be hard to play it.
Yeah,
because I mean, you get the still panels. It'd be hard to like represent that time.
Yeah.
Although the whiplash line, I thought was smart. I hope that's a writer that did that.
I think it was.
But then they get up to the kitchen. Yeah. And in the kitchen, there's like 25 guards, and it suddenly goes into the super, super slow-mo. But then Quicksilver can actually move at normal speed. And we see him run around the room to If I Had Time in a Bottle.
Yeah.
By I can't remember the artist's name.
Was it? It's not Pink Floyd, because Pink Floyd's the T-shirt
wearing. No. It's not Pink Floyd, but he is.
But all the humans have fired bullets, and Magneto, because he's in a room with metal now, has taken all the knives in the kitchen and launched them towards the human. And Quicksilver runs about, makes everybody punch themselves, mm-hmm. and pushes all the bullets and the knives out of the way. And it's awesome.
It's really, really good. And that is the scene that I remember when they were in production, mm-hmm. that they talked about, that they were filming at like 2,000 frames per second.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They filmed that at 2,000 frames per second. And the interesting fact is that I remember reading an article where Bryan Singer said that they had to light that set brighter than any other set.
Because of how many frames?
Because of the frames, because of the camera, the film stock made it darker.
And it's white walls.
True. Well, that's probably why they made it white walls, to help reflect more light.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And so, like, it was interesting to see that scene. Because it looked great.
It did. It reminded me of the scene in Inception when the room is turning and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is running around it, which is actually a Fred Astaire thing from like the 40s.
Uh-huh.
But it reminded me of that, but it was just much better done.
It was by far the best action piece of the entire movie. And I will say this, I was really worried about Quicksilver in this movie.
I was super worried.
And I'm so glad that he works. He's awesome. I want more Quicksilver in X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah, and Avengers now has a lot to live up to.
True.
Sony threw that gauntlet down, and they've got legs to stand on now.
Yeah. Oh, you 20th Century Fox.
20th Century Fox. Sorry, Sony's Spider-Man.
Sony's Spider-Man.
No property.
Yeah. True. The ball is now in Joss Whedon's court to make Quicksilver kick-ass.
Yeah.
No pun intended, because they're both in kick-ass, and one of them is kick-ass. Do you get it?
I get it. Yeah. I just haven't seen kick-ass. Moving right along.
Yeah, let's move on. Okay, so there is a question that I want to ask you right now.
It
was something I was very confused about, and there's another nitpick of this movie.
We can nitpick.
This movie has a lot of holes in it.
Yeah, well, it's an X-Men time travel story.
Yes. Well, one is a time travel story.
At least they're not in space.
Yeah, it's a time travel story. And the other thing about it is there's a lot of things that they just gloss right over.
Yeah.
And we had this conversation before the movie. I'll bring it up really quickly. You know, you saw X-Men Last Stand. You know,
sure did,
that Professor X died, and then he
disintegrated.
Well, he died.
Yeah.
But then he took his consciousness, if you watch all the way to the end of the credits, into this other person. Magneto lost his powers.
Mm-hmm.
They show up in 2023.
Yeah.
Professor X is alive. Magneto has his powers. They never explain why. And I was the one that was like, before the movie, I was like, they've got to explain this. They've got to explain this. And you were like,
I was like, no, you're not going to get any reference to it.
And they didn't. They did not explain it. Just like Kitty's powers.
We saw some clips of X3, so you know it's still in
continuity.
Canon. But they don't reference stuff like that directly. I think that is a little bit of Bryan Singer's like, hey, you guys can stuff it. I have to accept this movie, but I'm not accepting any of the rules it laid down, mm-hmm. and nerds to you. I'm going to retcon it all anyway.
Well, I brought up the whole plot holes thing.
Yeah.
Because they introduced this idea that Magneto was in the bottom of the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Because.
Oh, this.
He supposedly assassinated Kennedy.
Which is actually a really cool idea.
It is a cool idea, but he says that he was only bending the bullet. And he says probably the most confusing line in this entire movie, where Magneto says that he was trying to save Kennedy because JFK was a mutant.
Yeah, and everyone in the cinema groaned.
Yes.
Everyone was just like, really?
And that's
that's
as far as it goes. And they just drop it.
Yeah, it seems strange that if you're going to drop something like that. And I mean, when you pick a historical figure, someone who actually existed, it's a much bigger, I think, leap of logic and suspension of disbelief to make. But then to not follow up on it in any way is kind of like, you're just gonna leave that hanging there?
Well, it's huge.
Yeah.
It's a huge, I mean, the JFK assassination is such a monumental American event.
Yes.
It is so big. And to introduce that into a storyline is almost like that's almost what the movie should have been about.
It's a bit of a Chekhov's gun.
A little bit. A little bit. And it bothered me so much that it's like, I think they were like, okay, we need to have Magneto in a prison.
How do we fix it?
What's the best crime? Oh, he murdered JFK. It's so swept under the rug.
Yeah, it screams plot device.
Exactly. And so much to a point that, like, Charles at first is very angry at Magneto, right? Mm-hmm. Which you would be if you thought your best friend murdered the president of the United States.
Well, the first time he meets him, he punches him in the face.
Well, true.
It's pretty great.
But that's about as far as it goes.
Yeah, I mean, they fight on the plane a bit, but...
A little bit. But Charles forgives him pretty easily.
Well, Charles' whole turnaround, which is coming up in the plot, happens in the space of less than a scene.
Yeah, true.
Granted, there's a lot of sort of magic-y, mutant-y stuff that happens, which I don't know how a quote-unquote normal person would deal with and how you would compartmentalize that, but his shift happens rather quickly.
You know, there is an interesting scene that mm-hmm. we kind of glossed over. There's a scene where Bolivar Trask is trying to sell the Sentinels to the U.S. Congress
yeah.
and some generals. And there are two generals that are very famous. One is Chris Claremont, who wrote X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yep.
And the other one is Len Wein.
Who you recently interviewed for MajorSpoilers.com.
Yeah. Ooh, shameless plug. But he was the one that we almost didn't recognize because it looked like he was wearing a wig.
I think he was.
Yeah. But it was kind of cool to see them both in the movie.
Yeah, to see them both included was nice. Can we go back a bit and can I ask a question?
Yeah, do whatever you want.
Whatever I want.
This is the time travel. This is the Days of Future Past Major Spoilers podcast. Time travel is all wibbly wobbly.
Okay, here's my question.
Okay.
JFK is a mutant. Throw me out your idea for what his power was. Because I spent like 10 minutes thinking about this in the cinema.
The power of seduction.
Oh, so he's like one of those pheromone mutants. He can just make anyone fall in love with him.
It explains Marilyn Monroe. Because JFK, to be honest with you, is not the most good-looking guy. He really wasn't.
Like, no.
He was good-looking for presidents. But most of the American presidents are big, fat, ugly, old men with mustaches.
Mutton chops,
yeah. I mean, Grover and Cleveland, we're looking right at you.
I don't even know what he looks like.
Big mutton chops. So that's why I say his mutant power was the power of seduction.
Okay, acceptable.
And it worked on both sexes.
Ooh, there's a story there.
Yeah. Explains why Lyndon B. Johnson was the vice president.
Does it, though?
No, not really. And this is not a political podcast, so let's keep on moving
right along.
So they get Magneto, they go to Paris, and they confront Raven for the very first time. Now, in this movie, Raven, Mystique, Jennifer Lawrence.
Who they call Raven for most of the movie.
Well, yeah. She is in her classic Mystique, mostly naked blue.
She's not mostly naked. She's totally naked.
For most of the movie.
Yeah.
What did you think of Mystique in this movie compared to the last movie? I have one problem with her.
Uh-huh.
The problem is that they gave her the really bad slicked back hair that they gave Rebecca Romijn.
Yeah.
And it just looked bad. I wish they would have let her keep her long hair from First Class.
Yeah. I have a
And I know you're not the biggest Jennifer Lawrence fan.
I have a lot of issues with Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique in the first place. And I had problems with this film, especially when it was like Logan, Hank, Charles, and Eric driving around in the car, because I was like, wow, this is a lot of men. There's not really a lot of women doing very useful. Like, you have Kitty and Blinkenstorm in the future who are all kind of, like, sitting around, maybe doing
stuff. But Mystique
and then,
was a very big part of this
movie. I'm getting to it.
Oh, sorry.
And then you get Mystique in the past, and she's running around doing a lot of stuff. But it very much smacked of me of, oh, Jennifer Lawrence is a big star now. We better write her a big role.
Oh, because she's an Oscar winner.
Yeah, and because Hunger Games is coming to an end, and that's going to appeal to the Tumblr generation. And that kind of bugged me because it felt a little forced. Mm-hmm. But I will say, I thought Jennifer Lawrence was better in this movie than in anything else I'd ever seen her in.
Yeah.
I thought she was really good, and I actually believed she was Mystique instead of a whiny little girl taking a paycheck, which is very much what I felt about First Class.
Did you like that they brought back the whole Mystique has the gravity doesn't affect her so she can slide on floors and do karate moves?
I don't mind that because I like seeing ladies beat the crap out of men on screen.
Well, I like that too. I just always thought in the original X-Men movies, it was like she had this weird ability to defy gravity when she did karate moves.
Yeah. I always think that maybe, especially with the sliding on the floor and like whipping her body around the table and stuff, maybe she's got, because her skin is kind of weird, mm-hmm. maybe she's got that thing like hairless cats do and she's covered in like a fine film, so she's kind of slippery anyway. So, no, I like the big like fan kicks and stuff from X-Men and X-Men 2, and it was cool. I like seeing her kick Stryker. That brought brought me joy.
William Stryker is in this movie as a major?
Yeah.
He's Major William Stryker.
And he's more attractive than he's ever been.
Yes, and he apparently is going to have a very rough next 10 years because
Wolverine... He's going to turn into Brian Cox.
Well, no. Well, they show Brian Cox, and I actually think they filmed new footage for this movie because...
Brian Cox was scary as Stryker.
Yeah, but there were some new shots. Mm-hmm. They either had unused footage of Brian Cox... Or they shot new stuff because there were some shots.
They shot new stuff. He deserves work.
Older Brian Cox that I was like, we didn't see that next two at all.
Yeah.
This comes into the crux of the scene. William Stryker, in the whole Bolivar Trask, Xavier and Magneto confront Raven as she's about to kill Bolivar Trask, the event they're trying to prevent, right?
Yeah.
And she, in the whole confusion, gets stopped. William Stryker gets shocked. So it almost seems like William Stryker is going to die. And
Wolverine has his bone claws.
And Wolverine, this is what I think, this is very much like the Back to the Future disappearing from the photograph scene.
Oh, totally.
Because it seems like Wolverine's not going to exist.
Yeah.
And so he starts like freaking out.
And having kind of a fit.
And then he has a fit in the future and stabs Kitty Pryde.
Slashes Kitty
Pryde. Yeah. But yeah. It's a pretty grievous wound. Like, it's like she's going to die from this wound.
Yeah, but she can't move because then everyone will die.
Exactly. And what did you think of that? Did you like that? Because they kind of set it up at the beginning of the movie where they were like, hey, you got to stay calm, Logan. And Logan's like, I don't do calm, bub.
Yeah. You knew stuff like that was going to happen. I didn't mind it. I'm glad they only did it once.
I was worried that it was going to be during the climax of the movie, which I'm glad it didn't happen there.
But I have to say, I hate Wolverine with bone claws.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's something about it that doesn't appeal to me. Maybe it's the aesthetic of it, but as soon as he gets, like, the metal claws and the skeleton, I'm like, yeah, I'm right behind that. I want to be that mutant. But when it's bone claws, I'm like, this is lame.
So what you're saying is that you're 100% behind torture of a Canadian if it fuses metal to their bones.
Yeah, totally. A Canadian played by an Australian who everyone thinks is American.
You're like, I'll sell my countrymen down the river if it gets them a metal skeleton.
Yeah, totally.
You know, his bone claws were very ineffective in this movie. Like, so ineffective. Because he
got him stuck in a Sentinel.
Yeah, well, he smacked him in a Sentinel and it did nothing.
It's because they're made of bone. Actually, he's lucky they didn't break off.
I actually thought they were going to break off. I thought they were going to break off
like
at one point, and we were going to see
Wolverine.
And we were going to see him grow. You know, by the way, during the same scene, younger Charles Xavier mind scans Wolverine, and
they have a Vulcan mind meld.
Yes, and we see
scenes
from every single X-Men movie, both Wolverine movies,
yep.
And X-Men Last Stand.
There's quite a lot from X-Men Last Stand, I was surprised. But it's because of the reveal later on that we'll get to.
Yes, we will get to that. So everything goes nuts. Mutants go out in the public. People with their little Zapruder film cameras or 8mm, they capture Beast and Magneto fighting.
Yeah, they made a cool... I thought they used the found footage in a really interesting way.
It was a neat... It was a nice little thing. Wolverine gets his memories back. And so next I want to go to a scene that... was my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Ooh.
So Charles goes into Cerebro, and he breaks Cerebro.
Yeah.
And he can't get it to work, and Wolverine's like, read my mind. And he does, and young Charles, James McAvoy, mm-hmm. wakes up in the future and gets to talk to old Charles. And they did a really cool effect. They did this, like, looking through a colored glass effect. And it was almost like...
I didn't like that effect.
Oh, really? Was it against... Go ahead, say.
I didn't like that effect because I wear glasses and contacts, and so when anything is out of focus, my brain panics a little bit, and it's like, no, we can see. What's going on? We're supposed to be able to see.
Do I need to put eye drops in?
Yeah, so there was part of me that was like, no, just stop and let me see them.
Well, I dug it because to me it was like his younger mind getting acclimated to the future, because as you notice, it started off really strong.
Yeah.
And they even did this really cool effect that in the same shot,
perspectives.
Well, no, yeah, true. But in the same shot, James McAvoy was in focus and Patrick Stewart was glass.
Yes.
And then the glass became less and less and less until you, boom, they were both in focus. And of course, we get the famous line from the trailer where Patrick Stewart is like, "We need you to help again." That was a bad Patrick Stewart.
Which you've been quoting ad nauseum.
Oh, I love it. Xavier always talks about hope in every, like, that's almost
look,
a drinking
game. Look, he can't
say
I have a dream, so it's got to be hope.
We need you to hope. He says hope more than Superman says hope. It's ridiculous.
I know, and he doesn't have a kid in Namor Hope.
No, and he doesn't have a big symbol on his chest that means hope.
Yeah.
So it's like, why do you keep saying this?
I think it's an S.
That was Patrick Stewart's last day on set.
Yeah.
It was James McAvoy's first day on set. They talked about it. What'd you think? What'd you think of the Charles on Charles scene? The Charles Squared.
Charles Squared. I really liked that scene. I wish I had not seen it in the previews. I wish it had surprised me. I think it would have had more impact.
You know, I was going to bring up, this is a point that I was going to bring up towards the end when I thought we would like wrap up all the movie and talk about it. No. No, don't apologize. This is loosey-goosey. Whatever. We go. I thought that the best moments of the movie, save for Quicksilver, were all spoiled in the trailer.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
I think every big moment, every wow moment, except for Quicksilver, was in every trailer. Like, I feel with the trailers, I saw a scene or a piece of dialogue from every single scene in that movie.
Yeah, or from the scenes that they released,
mm-hmm.
Which weren't necessarily in the trailers. I think that's pretty accurate. I also felt like that scene in particular was like watching a master acting class. Like, you got to see the veteran who's won all the awards, and then you get to see James McAvoy, who I have mixed feelings about personally, but you can definitely tell that he's got a very good career trajectory. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of cool, like from an acting standpoint, to watch them play off each other. And if that's James McAvoy's first day on set, that's like a big deal.
It's pretty impressive.
It's like, hey, just go and like hang out with Patrick Stewart for 12 hours.
What'd you think about Ian McKellen basically being set dressing in this movie?
Ian McKellen shows up and I'm happy.
He really didn't do anything.
And no, the coolest thing he did was when he went out and
I'm going to call him the
future sentinel.
Well, yeah, there's a name for a specific type of sentinel that's like super futuristic.
Oh,
and I cannot remember it. I'll remember later.
Yeah, but when you saw the
Nimrod sentinels. Thank you.
Nimrod.
Yeah, because they're like the super
like the
future sentinels.
In Greek mythology.
Sorry to interrupt you. Keep going.
Yeah, stop it. I really liked the parallel where you got to see him go out in the preparation, knowing that he's going to go die,
mm-hmm.
To fight the Sentinels. And then you saw Fassbender bringing the baseball stadium to go attack. Like, he's going for his last stand against the American government. And I thought the parallel of those two scenes
Let's talk about that. So this all builds to this press conference that's on the White House lawn. Richard Nixon is like, we're gonna do the Sentinels, folks. Here we go.
Yeah, pretty good analog they got, that actor.
He looked great. He looked great. And so Charles and Wolverine and Hank go there to stop Raven, who's going to shoot Bolivar Trask. And then Magneto's loose. And Magneto, you see this scene where he's on a train and he takes the train tracks and he puts the train tracks into the Sentinels and bonds them with them.
He breaks them down and like weaves it into their circuitry and stuff. It was really cool.
It was cool.
Except it was the time I noticed the CGI more than anything else.
True. It was cool. But later in the movie, just him doing that made him get computer control of the Sentinels?
Yeah, like when he was like, go do what you were made to do, and it just wanders off to go kill mutants.
It's like, metal in my brain, make me do what you want. It didn't make sense. It didn't quite make sense.
No, it didn't bother me that much, though.
But anyways, so Magneto goes to this baseball diamond, and he just lifts the stadium. And at first, you're just like, what are you doing? Are you just showing off?
I was totally waiting for, like, Bane and his lackeys to come tumbling out of one of the dugouts. I know it's a football stadium, but still.
It's just they'd be like, take control of your city. And he's like, that's what I'm doing. You know, he lives in the stadium. But I did like the idea that it was that Magneto was taking this baseball diamond to create a fence around the White House.
Yeah, that was really
to
cool.
Box. He could have done it a little bit better. But then he took control of the Sentinels, and he went there with the intention of killing
everyone.
Basically all of the White House and the staff.
Yeah, the senior staff.
Which didn't, and on camera too. Like, he turns on all the cameras.
Yeah.
It didn't quite make sense. Charles and Wolverine and Beast were very ineffective. And Wolverine is impaled with all this rebar.
Yeah, that was really scary.
That was rough.
That was when I was like, ugh.
That was really rough. And he throws him into the bottom of a river.
What's the river in Washington? The Potomac?
I believe so. Yes. Don't quote me on that. I've never been to Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. listeners, please let us know. Yeah. But so he went there to kill the president and all of them, and then Raven stops him.
Yeah.
On camera. Thoughts?
I thought that if she was going to shoot him in the neck, he should have suffered for it a little more. He, like, falls. Well, she kicks him, and he falls down, and then he stands back up, and he's not bleeding. It's, like, scabbed over and everything.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Again, I felt like they were like, oh, well, we have Jennifer Lawrence. Let's make her shoot Michael Fassbender. I thought it was an interesting choice as far as storytelling, but a weak moment the way it was executed.
I thought that this climax was very weak. I really do.
I think because it smacked the most of a big Hollywood blockbuster mm-hmm. as opposed to like a comic book
Well,
movie.
Also, this was being intercut with the future footage because in the future, the Sentinels had finally found them and the Sentinels were like, we're going to kill all you
they
future
just
X-Men.
Murder everyone.
And you get to see Storm impaled. You get to see Bobby's head crushed. Colossus is ripped in half.
That was 9-year-old me was like, oh my god!
And they show all of it. It's pretty like
and
rough.
Oh, what's his name? The one who can see them coming.
Not Sunspot. Warpath.
Yeah, Warpath gets his face burned off.
Yep. Blink gets stabbed by three people at the same time.
Three huge.
Sunspot's
sentinels.
Arm gets ripped off,
and then he gets exploded.
Yeah.
Bishop gets exploded.
Yeah, Bishop gets exploded. Magneto gets stabbed in the gut.
Yeah.
And their last ditch attempt, and so basically Magneto just leaving. But he leaves his helmet behind. I wonder if that's significant. And Mystique leaving changes the future somehow. I didn't really understand. So that was the
yeah.
big climax of the movie, that them leaving was supposed to change the future somehow.
Whereas the events of the future seem to allude to that they needed to get together and work as a team or
exactly.
a family, and they still all
exactly.
left.
Because, you know, Magneto says this very specific line. He was like, if you leave me here, Charles, you know they'll kill me.
Yeah.
And Charles goes,
I'm as good as dead, I think is what he
yeah,
says.
Yeah, I know, Eric. I know. I was waiting for the very next line to be like, that's why you need to come back to the school.
Yeah.
And we bring the team back together.
Or even for Eric to have a line that's like, but put more eloquently than this, like, do you have a spare room or do you have
something.
Somewhere I could
yes.
stay?
Yes. And then because like that seemed to be the lesson, because we get to see this nice little scene back in the future between Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
Although we wasted so many years hating each other.
Yeah.
If we mm-hmm. could have a precious few more together.
Ian McKellen's like. Precious death scene, right? But Magneto just leaves. Mystique just leaves.
Limps off.
And that's all we see of the past. And,
yeah, yeah.
And Logan wakes back up and
has been drowning for like 10 minutes
oh,
now.
Yeah, he's long. He's brain dead. I don't care healing factor or not. He's done.
Yeah.
So Logan wakes back up in the future, and here we get the new X-Men timeline.
A soft
reboot of the X-Men timeline. It's 2023. We're in the school. Tell everybody about the school. I feel like I'm talking too much, and I apologize, Ashley.
I'm not upset.
You're just like, I love this movie so much, I don't want to say anything.
Yeah, here's something I didn't like. Anna Paquin was back as Rogue.
You know what? She was basically cut out of the movie, though.
Fantastic, because she's terrible. I don't think Anna Paquin is a terrible actress. I think she's a terrible Rogue.
Well, we'll set up the scene for everybody so that we know what we're talking about.
So Logan wakes up. In the future.
And back in 2023.
Back in 2023, which is actually 2013. And it's almost the same shot as when you see him waking up in the past, mm-hmm. which is kind of nice. And he rolls out of bed and there's a futuristic little alarm clock playing golden oldies music.
A hologram.
And yeah, with a hologram on the top. Mm-hmm. He gets up, he goes into the hall, he sees, and in the post-apocalyptic future, Kitty Pryde and Bobby Drake are together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so he goes out in the hall and the first thing he sees is Rogue and Bobby Drake
yeah.
together, as it should be. And he's like, oh man, this
and
is
then
so
he...
different. And then there's kids in the school mm-hmm. and they're running about.
It's bustling. The school looks cool. It's very
it's clean.
Filled. Yeah.
He goes into another room and Kitty and Colossus are there teaching mm-hmm. and the fangirl inside me is so thrilled. He walks down the hall and Kelsey Grammer
as Beast
walks past him and it's so fantastic.
The makeup looked a little weird, but
I don't even care.
I was so happy to see Kelsey Grammer.
Because he's wasted. And then he goes down the stairs in the hallway and turns, and there's a girl with really bright Kool-Aid red hair
yeah, yeah.
in a really bright Kool-Aid red dress.
Yeah, and it's obviously who?
And it's Jean.
But then...
And she looks great.
She looks good. She's like 50 years old, and she still looks Pomska
still
Johnson.
Beautiful.
Looks amazing.
And he goes up to her.
Then we get the coolest cameo in the movie.
And he goes to touch her hair, yes. And then
a hand grabs his hand and says, "Easy, buddy," and it's Cyclops.
Yeah, with really lame glasses.
With really bad Star Trek sunglasses.
I mean, they're cool the first time you see them because you're like, "Oh, it's like the visor," and then you're like, "No, they're lame."
I literally cheered.
I was so happy that Cyclops was back.
Like, I heard rumors that he was in this movie, but I was like, yes, he's back.
Yeah.
So basically, X-Men Last Stand is out of continuity.
Totally doesn't even matter. So you don't need to, when you watch X-Men and X2, you don't need to be like, man, I should watch X3.
Just skip right the Days of Future Past.
Yeah.
Just skip right the Days of Future Past. So, and then Xavier is in it, and Wolverine says, like, oh, the last thing I remember is you know,
drowning,
and Xavier realizes that he's like, oh, it's the James McAvoy time travel trip now thing. Oh,
he
now
says,
I can talk to you.
Welcome back.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome back. And then we cut back to the past, and we get probably the weirdest
foreshadowing scene.
Well, true, but I was going to say, this was a very weird way to end this movie. The final scene, go ahead and tell them the final scene.
Excuse me. The final scene is Wolverine's at the bottom of what is possibly the Potomac River.
The maybe Potomac
but
River.
May or may not be the Potomac River. And you see him getting dragged out with all the rebar through him. And he's on top of what looks like a piece of a metal fence and what looks suspiciously like the thing that he was on top of when he came out of the tank in the Project
X
flashbacks.
Yeah, a lot of foreshadowing. And it's Major Stryker.
And it's Stryker right there. Well,
but then it reveals that it's Mystique.
Yeah, and so it's Stryker, and then they say, "What are we going to do with him?
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's alive!
I got plans."
Yeah, and he's like, "Bring him with me. I've got plans."
And then it just cuts to credits.
And well, you see her little yellow contacts.
Yeah. I thought that was a weird ending scene.
Yeah, it was fan service because the studio heads and the writer were like, "People like Wolverine. We should talk about Wolverine one more time."
Well, I don't see the point of what revealing that as Mystique does. It makes
Mystique, like, really mean.
It doesn't add anything.
No.
I don't know.
It should have ended with Charles and Logan, I don't know, sitting down and cracking a history book or something.
And then cut to credits. We roll through the credits. And at the very end of the credits.
Why don't you tell us about that scene?
Oh, man.
I feel like you know more about it than I do.
Oh, you have no idea. I was so happy.
This is another thing we discussed before what we thought the end credit scene was, because I have no idea.
I was so close to guessing.
Yeah, Jason almost called it.
I knew it was going to be something with Insabinur. I was like, and I kind of figured they showed that Chinese temple, and I was like, I have a feeling they're going to find the Chinese wall, and they're going to see Insabinur and scrawled on it. But they did something even better. They cut to this Egyptian scene, and you hear people chanting Insabinur, Insabinur.
A horde of people.
And I didn't think they were going to show him. They showed this hooded figure.
I actually thought it was a girl when they first pulled
around,
and I was like, "Who is that?"
And he's holding up his hands, and you see the pyramids being built by like mutant powers, and the camera turns around, and it's blue skinned, blue lipped, young Apocalypse.
Yeah,
and they're just chanting Insabinur, Insabinur. Cut. Holy crap.
I think that's an awesome end credit scene, but I feel like it's going to be like the first end credit scene where they reveal the Tesseract, where most people aren't going to get it.
It's exactly like the Thanos Avengers scene.
Yeah, it's for the people who, it's for the major spoilers people.
Oh, I'm fine with that, you know?
I'm not saying there's a problem with that, but I'm saying as far as general audiences go, I think it's going to miss a mark a little bit.
So we've talked through the movie. We just kind of like talked through the plot.
Yeah.
I hope that's a good way to talk about the movie, right?
Sure.
I mean, it sparked about it. We had enough discussion. What do you think overall about X-Men Days of Future Past? Like just general thoughts and any scenes or any things that we just kind of missed. What do you think?
I mean, there were scenes that we didn't talk about, but none of them that I think were like super interesting. Like Mystique seducing and beating people up is only so interesting to me.
Well, we've seen it before.
Yeah, we've seen it in every X-Men movie ever.
Do you think this is the best X-Men movie ever made?
No.
What is the best X-Men movie
X2.
Ever made? Okay.
I think, and I kind of feel this way about some other trilogies of movies as well. I feel like X-Men is, the first one is very story heavy, and it needs to be. It's the origin story without really being an origin story, which is cool. And I think that X-Men 2 is, for an X-Men story, the perfect balance of action and story on film.
My favorite is actually First Class.
I know.
I just feel, and it may be Matthew Vaughn, I feel the emotional beats of First Class.
I think it's Fassbender.
Are so spectacular. No, I've said this time and time again, like, I think it's the McAvoy-Fassbender relationship.
Yeah.
Like, you truly see their friendship happen, and you see, like, their pain. And I will say that this is one of my problems about this movie, and this is why I do not think this is the best X-Men movie ever made. It's really good. It's probably in the top three.
But I'd put it in the top three.
There was a lot of this movie where I thought that it was just flat. There was no tension builds. No spectacular moments of, yeah! And a lot of it was flat. Part of that might have been in the music. I thought the music was really in.
The music sucked. I think part of it, too, is that if you have any knowledge of how comic books go, even if you're vaguely aware of the Days of Future Past timeline, you know that none of this is going to really matter because it's going to be a reboot.
True.
So I think that kind of, in like that pre-existing knowledge, ooh, I punched my pop filter, invalidates a lot of what could be really heavy emotional
beats. I also think, too, that there were a lot of moments in this movie where Bryan Singer was just calling out homages to his previous movies.
Oh, yeah. And the advertising was like that, too. It was like, by Bryan Singer, you know, the guy who did the good X-Men movies.
Well, we had Magneto flip around metal balls again.
They were bigger and scarier this time.
We had a Cerebro scene that was exactly like a Cerebro scene we've seen before.
Yeah.
Like, there were a lot of call-outs to previous X-Men movies. And I think that, I don't know, for me, those didn't work. Because I think because of First Class, I was like, oh, you can do new stuff in this universe, and it works. Whereas Bryan Singer, I think a lot of times, the only new thing I think he introduced was Quicksilver.
Yeah.
That was something new, and it was fantastic.
Maybe that's why it was so exciting.
Exactly. Whereas everything else, I was like, I've seen this before. I've seen Magneto control metal before. I've seen Magneto fly before. I've seen Wolverine try to fight somebody before.
Yeah, but how much can you do with those characters on, like, within the restrictions of the film universe?
Well, that's true. And that's why I think something First Class did so much better than Days of Future Past was because we got to see those scenes of people lifting stuff and moving stuff, but there was an emotional element to it.
That they totally dropped when the kids showed up, but yeah.
Yeah, well, but even the whole fact of, like, in the climax of that movie where he lifts the submarine, that's an emotional scene. That's not an action. It's an action scene, but it has this emotional power.
Yeah, there was definitely more action movie beats in this. Top three X-Men movies, go.
The top three?
For you, yeah.
First Class, X-Men 2, I'd probably put Days of Future Past third.
Yeah?
And then
X1. Hmm.
What do you think?
I would do X2, X-Men, and then Days of Future Past.
Interesting.
That's how I would do it, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ashley, I think we've had enough discussion. Any other points you want to bring up about this or anything like that?
You should go see it, listeners.
Well, that's what I was just about to ask you. Would you recommend this to a friend?
Well, I think all of my friends have seen it. But yeah, to any of my friends who are dawdlers, I would absolutely recommend you see it. And I think it does a really good job of putting a lot of the exposition in there. You don't have to have a lot of knowledge of even the previous X-Men movies to get the story.
I think you would miss a lot, though.
You would, but I think you could go in, and I think most people have seen at least one of them this point, but I think you could go into it without having seen them all.
True.
And you could be like, oh, okay, I kind of know what's going on.
And I almost think you almost would be better off if you had only seen X-Men 1 and 2. You almost don't need First Class. Because a lot of the events of First Class are almost negated by this movie.
Yeah, that's true. But I think you would miss something of the Charles and Eric relationship. But yeah, I think anyone could go into this and really enjoy it. But I would be wary about taking tiny children to it.
Yeah.
Because it's not bloody and gory, but it's violent.
It's very violent. I would hate to see that little kid whose favorite X-Fan is Colossus just cry when Colossus dies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, Mommy, why?
Yeah, that would be really sad.
I would totally recommend this movie.
Yeah?
Do you think you'll see it again?
Yeah. Like 9 more times.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We already talked about this. Folks, it's a late night.
It's really late.
It's very late. Like, we saw this movie very late, and we're recording this podcast very late, so we're a little sparse.
Will you see it again?
Yes. I will see it at least one more time in theaters because there is a lot of elements. It's like an onion. It's like an X-Men onion, and I want to unwrap some layers. And plus, I want to see if I'm less judgmental on it. I had my expectations kind of high for this one.
Yeah.
But I would totally recommend it. Like I said, the third best X-Men movie, in my opinion.
Mine too.
The third, you know, it's not
solid bronze medal there, Brian Singer.
This is the bronze medal of X-Men movies.
This is what's a country that does like mildly well in the Olympics? Canada. This is like the Canada of the Summer Olympics because we only win the Winter Olympics.
You know, and you know, I think that's a perfect place to end it. So, listeners, if you enjoyed our special Major Spoilers talk about X-Men Days of Future Past, you know what you should do? You should head on over to majorspoilers.com
yeah.
and you can share your thoughts of the movie in the X-Men Days of Future Past talkback post. Let us know if you think this is a silver or a gold medal X-Men movie. We don't know. Is there a fourth place? There isn't a fourth place. Nobody cares about fourth.
That's all you tried. That's like the Wolverine.
Yeah, true. Well, you know, we want to real quick thank everybody who is a Major Spoilers VIP, and thank you so much for your special contribution to make this special episode, to allow Ashley and me to share our thoughts to you through the interwebs. That's because of listeners and contributors like that, you know, and you get to go to a special site, members.majorspoilers.com, where there's all kinds of cool stuff. If you just, you know, donate the cost of a comic book, it's that easy. And, you know, you can find me on Twitter if you want to find me outside of the Major Spoilers at Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. You know, go follow me. I talk about comic books a lot and share a lot of crazy comic book pictures. Ashley, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Ashley V. Robinson on the Twitter, where I am frequently in conflict with Matthew Peterson at Mighty King Cobra.
And don't forget to follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at Major Spoilers and go to majorspoilers.com. So that's it for X-Men Days of Future Past.
Woo!
We had a great time at the movie. You should go to the movie and then go right to majorspoilers.com. And give your very thoughts on the movie.
Can we go see it again now?
Sure.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, listeners. Thanks for listening.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit majorspoilers@majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers Forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers.
If I had the X-ray vision of a Superman, I could save some bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the rack. And although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he'd make me wait out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Oh, wait, I think I found a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little me would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would you bag and board your comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, 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 yeah. What a major spoiler.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2014.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.